Fighters, today I have a conversation with my buddy John Bryant. He is the founder of Paint Scout. He's up in Calgary, Canada. That is the country north of the United States, for those that don't know. He's also the owner of his own painting company, crushing it up there. But he created Paint Scout to help painting contractors. But listen, we are not going to talk about software the whole time. In fact, we hardly talk about it at all. We're actually going to talk about some data that he has pulled together from some of the top salespeople that you guys might find interesting. And so we dig into that and also talk about a virtual event he's got coming up that if you hit the show notes, you will be able to find a link for that and check it out. So without further ado, here is John Bryant. Hey, are you related to Kobe Bryant?
Absolutely. They call me White Mamba.
White Mamba? Okay, cool. All right. John, welcome to the fight. How you doing, man?
Good, Tom. How you doing, man? Good to see you.
I'm doing good. So guys, I have John Bryant, Kobe Bryant's brother.
Mm-hmm. White Mamba, they call me, Tom.
Yeah.
It's only my friends and family get to call me that.
That's right. So did you play sports growing up?
I did. Yeah, I played a lot of soccer. I actually played,
did you?
Played college right. Soccer. Yeah. Yep.
College soccer?
Good times.
Where'd you play? Where at?
University of Calgary.
All right.
In Canada.
That's in Canada, right?
Canada, yeah, so. That's correct.
That's right.
We play on ice here. So
so what position did you play in soccer?
I was a goalie.
All right. So that's interesting because my wife's best friend's daughter is a goalie. Right. She just got a full ride. She's in her freshman year. She has a full scholarship to, dude, she was recruited by like Alabama and all these other schools and shit. Sweet. She ended up, it's in Utah. Is there a Westminster College or something? What? Something? No, I can't even remember the name of it. Damn it. But anyway, she opted to go there.
Your guess is better than mine.
And I think she opted to go there because her boyfriend goes to school down the street. But she's kicking ass. She's running track there now. She's playing soccer. My daughter, Iris, who's a freshman at GCU in Arizona. She was a soccer player. Her team lost in the state finals this last season, which was a bummer, but it was a fun ride. And I'm a football guy.
Okay.
American football guy. Yep. But I'll tell you, spending so many years watching my daughter play soccer, dude, you can see why it's like the world's most popular sport, right? Like it's just, once you start to understand the game a little bit, and I'll tell you what, the last thing I would want to be is a goalie. That's a lot of real estate, man. Like,
man,
seriously,
man.
That's a lot of real estate. You stand in that thing?
Oh, man, so, it's a lot. Yeah, and the only reason I ended up playing that position is because nobody else wanted to.
Because you're slow.
That's just the kind of guy I am.
But, you know, yeah, no, nobody else could do it. So how tall are you?
I'm 6 feet, so I'm pretty small.
Okay, is that small for a goalie? Are most goalies like longer and lankier and, you know...
Well, you look at the net and then you look at me. And at the time I was, 140 pounds soaking wet, 6 feet tall. And then there's a guy who's 6'4". I don't look like the obvious option.
Okay.
So I got to prove myself in other ways. But yeah, I mean, it's a big net. So the bigger the guy, the bigger the lady, I guess taller, that covers more real estate in theory.
Okay. I speak at a tall and lanky. I went to the Denver Nuggets game last week with one of my sons. He's a huge NBA guy. And I got tickets literally right behind the Nuggets bench. So we were there, could hear everything and stuff and hanging out. And I have not been to an NBA game since I was probably like 10 years old. Like just hadn't gone. Holy crap, are they athletic, man?
Yeah.
I mean, like, obviously the pros in anything are kick ass, but like just the there was one dude shooting in the warmups with the team. And I looked at my son and I go, hey, there's a guy my height and I'm 5'10". And my son goes, dad, he's 6'3".
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Compared
and
to
I'm
the
like,
rest
are
of
you
them,
serious? He's like, yeah, that, cause that guy's 7'2" and that guy's 6'10".
Yeah.
So anyway, speaking of professional sports teams, what's going on at Paint Scout?
What a transition.
How's that for a segue?
Yeah, great
so
transition.
So what the hell is Paint Scout for those that don't know? Let's start with that.
Yeah, Paint Scout's it's a sales engine for painting contractors that want to grow aggressively, professionally. They care about the experience and they want to make a lot of money doing what they do. That's what we help contractors do in the paint industry.
Where the hell were you when I had a painting business 20 years ago? Damn it.
Oh man, we would have been great buddies.
I know.
Yeah.
Because I'm on your website right now. Build accurate painting estimates in minutes, not hours. I can't tell you how many hours I'll never get back because I didn't have this.
Once you're there and you feel that pain, it's a real pain for sure.
Well, then you got to go in and do the revisions and shit like that, man. Like it's, you get ugly. But guys, we're not going to spend the whole time talking about software today. So if you're a painter, go to paintscout.com and book a demo. But we're actually going to have a conversation about top performing salespeople and some data that you've kind of gathered based on you did a talk at the paint convention, the PCA Expo. And we thought it would be kind of cool to highlight some of those things that you shared about top performing salespeople in the painting industry. And I assume there's going to be some crossover if you're not a painting industry person, because a lot of, you know, how you do one thing's how you do everything, right? Things carry over. So Absolutely. Dude, what do you got, man? What's going on? What's the data telling us?
Man, it's fascinating, honestly, even for myself as somebody who started in the painting industry, to finally have access to this data. I was like a kid in a candy shop, to be honest. What we did is we analyzed the top 36 performers on our platform. Mm-hmm. And these are people that are selling, these are sales reps or business owners selling $2 million annually in their account. And that puts them at kind of the top 1%. And so we started to look at them and analyze what they do that's just different. And how do they get to $2 million when, a lot of other businesses just aren't there?
Yeah.
And there was some pretty common trends, really interesting stuff that actually isn't that hard at the end of the day. It just takes watching your data, watching your numbers, and having a real understanding of why you're doing what you're doing. And so the average
company across all industries, only 9% or so actually do $1 million a year in any industry across the board. And I don't know what it is now, but when I was in the industry painting many years ago, I want to say the average painting company was like 250 a year.
Oh yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Is that still pretty accurate? Okay. So what'd you learn, man? The top 36 in your system here, all doing 2 million or more. Mm-hmm. What was the biggest thing that jumped out to you?
Well, okay, let me start with this, Tom, because you've been involved in the painting industry for a long time. What do you think the top residential sales rep would sell annually? This is in North America. What do you think they could do?
Residential? I'd say right around 2 million.
Yeah. And the top guy's doing 4.85.
Okay.
And so we were able to look at what he's doing. Yeah, no kidding. And he wants to do more next year.
Yeah. So, okay.
So
a sales rep, not the owner of the company.
Correct.
Just doing only 4.8.
Just a simple 4.8. Feels like there's room to improve.
What's the average project size for this guy? Is it 10 grand, $7,500, $5,500?
Great question. That's an amazing question. So the average is $7,500.
Okay.
Yeah, $7,500. And actually, that's the average across all the res repaint guys for doing $2 million plus.
So for those that are wondering, 4.8 million divided by 7,500 is 640 jobs. Now, obviously, selling some 50,000s and some 20s and some $1,000 jobs. But 640 divided by 12, he's selling an average of 53 projects a month. Mm-hmm. Anyone want that sort of sales guy in their company?
Yeah, we're not going to tell you where he works or who his name is, because there might be some poaching here, you know? So, that's the interesting thing. Now, what do you think? So obviously you hit the nail on the head there. Like these are not $7,500 jobs each. It's bigger job sizes mixed in. So I think in total, there might've been 430 jobs closed.
Okay.
So there's some bigger ones.
Yeah.
And you know, really that there's a takeaway there from the data too, which is that, you know, it's learning how to position yourself to get larger jobs, use your time effectively. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, okay, here's another question for you. What would you assume? So you're a residential repaint, either owner or sales rep. How many estimates per year or let's go with per week. How many estimates per week do you need to do in order to hit $2 million? What'd you think?
Can I math here? Hold on. I'm mathing.
Yeah, you've already got a little bit of data in hand. So I'm worried
here.
You're not
all
the
right,
best audience.
So it's that divided by, I'm going to say their close rate is around that, but 650, 700 estimates.
Okay, so it's significantly more than, the number that you need to do is significantly less. So,
okay. I ran a $7,500 job size, which gave like 266 jobs.
Yep.
For 2 million divided by 40% close rate.
40% close rate. Okay.
I just guessed on the 40%. So that would be 665 leads. What was it?
65. So you got to do, on average, these guys are doing 12 estimates a week.
Okay.
So it's roughly 540, I think is the number. Maybe you can do the math. I can't remember exactly.
50 or 52 weeks.
We went over 52 weeks. So let's go 50 and see what that works out to. That'd probably 13.
12 times 50 is 600.
600. Yeah.
I wasn't that far off.
You weren't that far off. I just wanted to give you a hard time. Yeah. I wanted to make you feel something, Tom. You
it's
know?
All good, man. I'm with you. I'm with you. So 12 a week, which is, 2.4 a day if you're not working weekends.
Yep.
All right.
So that's interesting. I think a lot of people assume, especially if you look at Facebook groups or people who are offering information, mm-hmm. and someone says, how many, estimates should a sales rep do a week? People are saying, 15 to 20. The reality, I think, is that when you do a little bit less, you do actually more because you're not running around like a chicken with your head cut off. You've actually got some process mm-hmm. for what you're doing. You're vetting your leads a little bit more. So, kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's so what in your data that you pulled, was there any information, maybe not, on lead sources that were the best for a painting contract?
I can tell you what the number one highest closing lead source is. And past after customers. That, it's kind of a bit of a
past customers.
Cluster cuss. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's past customers.
Okay, so get that out of the way. What's the next one?
So it's past customers and referral. We found that for these top guys are closing between 70-80%.
Okay.
And it's actually wild when you start to think about where you allocate your marketing dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of us, I think, go to that, let's get the Facebook, let's get all that cranking. Not bad. The set rate is but not very good on Facebook.
No.
And the set rate being from lead to actually setting an appointment, not great. Google's a little better for sure because people have intent, right? They're looking for that job. It didn't just strike them while they were, trying to see what their, ex-girlfriend from high school was up to these days. They're actually have intent. So that's a little bit higher. And then from there, it's kind of just a mix of, direct mail, stuff like that. It's hard to really pinpoint because there's just such a variety of approaches to marketing. Some people do it twice and then stop doing direct mail.
Right.
That's not really fair. It's hard to compare apples to apples, but 100% without a doubt, it's past customer and referral. And
yeah.
And so when we, are telling people, hey, look at your marketing dollars. How do you encourage more people to stay involved with your company? Look at these as lifetime customers. It's not a one-off. Even in painting or contracting or anything, you're building a relationship. And it was pretty interesting seeing that because I think we dismiss that as it's great, people refer me. You can actually encourage that though, I think.
Mm. If you had, I don't know, let me pick a number. If you had $5,000 a month to spend on marketing, how would you use it?
Oh,
knowing
man.
What you know from the data you got, what would you, What would you do? Look like?
It's such a fascinating question. I think you got to be available when people are looking for you. And so you're going to want to allocate something to your Google AdWords and when people search for you, got to show up. So SEO, a little bit of Google AdWords.
Mm-hmm.
Part of this is that I'll give you a quick anecdote about what we do at our family painting company.
Yeah.
Because I think it speaks to this question. So my brother we didn't believe he was a natural salesperson. It's just a long story of us trying to part ways, him coming back. And his DISC profile, if you're familiar with DISC, which I'm sure you are, is this guy's not cut out to be a sales rep. but I wanted to give him a chance. My brother, I care for him. Come on back, man. Low overhead. Love to have you. You can find out this is not for you on your own. And he has since proven me completely wrong in terms of what my expectations were for a sales rep, at least in the painting industry. Mm-hmm. He is the top three or number three, number four performer in all of Paint Scout for dollars sold. And he's number two for win rate. And what he does differently than other reps is that he networks. He gets his own leads. He takes ownership for the sales process.
John, just got a Woody. I literally just got a Woody.
I'm glad this camera cuts off.
A sales rep who gets their own leads. My Lord, I'm all tingly in the happy places right now. All right. Sorry to cut you off, but I can't not share how amazing that is, because seriously, I think most sales, and I'll shut up in a minute and let you get back to this.
Sure.
Yeah. Brother, but dude,
yeah.
Most sales reps, air quotes, are nothing more than order takers. They're waiting they're like little baby birds waiting for the Google gods to feed them a worm, give them a lead, or the company to give them a lead, or their marketing agency to give them a lead, and they don't lift a fucking finger to call their own database, to send messages to them, to join a networking group, to stop at a house that has a dumpster in front of it and go, hey, not sure what's going on in there, but I happen to paint stuff. Well, you might want to know me. Like, I did shit like that all the time as a painter. So this is when salespeople are out on the hunt like that and building relationships, that warms my heart. Okay, I'm done. I'm off my soapbox. There we go.
I mean, Tom, like, you nailed it on the head here. Like, I mean, it's like, well, I'm trying to answer your question here about marketing spend by saying that sales reps that get this, that understand, business owner, sales rep, when you understand that this is about relationship and most of the stuff you do is based on trust, and you can get out of the hamster wheel of trying to compete with everybody else who's trying to do a, you know, half hour, if you're lucky, an hour pitch on why you should trust them, you win more. And so when you're looking at your marketing spend, be available, be willing to do that, but also consider what it takes to build relationships. And what Dave does differently than other reps, even in our own company, is he goes to places. He goes to real estate offices. He goes to, you know, different property management, HOA places.
Interior design firms, whatever it might be, right? Yeah.
And all he does is he brings donuts.
This is Dave.
It's my brother Dave.
Does Dave want to move to Colorado Springs? He's motivating me to start another painting business.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So
we'll do a million in 6 months with Dave. I promise.
Totally. And you know what's crazy? Like I'll tell a little bit more of what's crazy in the end. But he does these things and he sees results and it gives him energy and he. By nature, what separates him from other reps is like, so his profile is not like aggressive or dominant in the process.
Is he like a high S, high C?
SC pretty much.
Personality?
Yep. SC. Okay.
Yep.
And he is competitive to the max. He wants to win. And so when we exposed him to the data and we looked at our marketing spend and said, like, you know what, we're going to start doing some community building stuff. You have full license to do whatever you want to build relationships. And we're going to base our budget around what you guys think, like our team, what you think that means. Once we know what you think relationship building is going to cost, we're going to take the rest of our budget out of that. Because we want to be driven first by relationships. Yeah. Because we know that those close so much higher. They're way more valuable long-term. And we can build a significant business that has repeat business and through our reputation. And our customers. And so that's a long way of answering your question.
I love it.
It's interesting.
So for every 100 leads that came into our painting business back in the day, about 80 of them were past customers and relationships, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
There was a point in time when I was in 5 networking groups. I was in 3 Chamber of Commerce networking leads groups, they called them. I was in another independent business leads generating group. And then I was in a BNI and it was game changing. like truly, absolutely. You know, and just being on the hunt and building those relationships. And I think that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's where a lot of contractors are going wrong now in our day and age of technology and all the apps, and, you know, which is great. It's helpful, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I see a guy posting like the Facebook group, oh, my phone hasn't rang in 3 weeks. You know, you start having a conversation with that guy's actions over the last few months, and you realize that he hasn't done shit to build relationships with anybody. He's exactly. just, again, waiting for Google to do its job or Facebook ads and, you know, whatever. So how about the dude doing 4.8? Is he big on relationship too? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. So we actually got a chance to interview these guys too. So we surveyed the group and interviewed them. And what we found was that the commonality amongst the people we interviewed, and we imagine this is kind of similar to the whole high-performing group, is they set a lot of targets around activity. And by activity, it means networking activity. And so our data doesn't show there's like a silver bullet to this.
Right.
The only thing that actually is the silver bullet is activity and consistency. Mm-hmm. And so if you can set up a system where you have targets on what activity means and be consistently hitting that, you are going to build a network. It's like, it's not rocket science.
Yeah. So to take that a little deeper, I want to elaborate on what, John, you're talking about is the difference between leading and lagging indicators. Mm-hmm. Okay. So for those don't know what that is, a leading indicator would be like, every time I go in my data, if I go in my database and pick up the phone and call 3 of my past customers a day, 5 days a week. Okay. Mm-hmm. That is going to lead to a result later. A lagging indicator is what did you sell this month? Right. Because they lag behind the activity. And so as you brought up, the best salespeople are fanatical about the activities that lead to the cash register ringing, and they keep making those dials, they keep building those relationships, they keep making their follow-up calls, whatever activities you deem, you know, what we called in my old company, we called them bacon-making activities. Mm-hmm. And what makes the bacon? Every time I go to a networking event and meet somebody, it leads to making bacon later on. And so for us, blogging, when we did blogs and content, we knew that those types of things still to this day lead to revenue. So I'm not a fan of looking at my sales goal every day, right? Like I'm a fan of looking at what are the non-negotiable activities that need to be done today. So I just wanted to elaborate on that you brought that up.
Yeah.
Because that's the secret, right? To being a top elite performing salesperson is the activity.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like, I think a lot of people, it's hard to remember that these activities take 6 to 8 weeks to actually hit. And we see that time and time again mm-hmm. in our data from our company that the things you do today, they're not immediate results.
Yeah.
I think even speaking to what you said, Tom, about like the, you know, the technology world we live in, it's like, we want things now. Mm-hmm. And this is like a delayed gratification type situation where you deliver donuts, you're not going to get a quote request today. If you do, well, chances are there's just somebody that needed it today to get it off to a board, and you're probably not going to get that job anyways.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You might hit one randomly, but these are things that are going to build over time. Mm-hmm. And if you're consistent with them, you are going to see results. And in my brother's situation, he received 366 referrals last year. And so that number is one a day for those who are calculating. Yeah. He doesn't even take, like for him, there's no value in being in competitive situations anymore. Hmm. And his win rate is so high that why would he go back?
What's he doing to generate those referrals other than your company delivering a great experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is there something specific he's checking the box on each day, or what's that look like?
Yeah. One of the things I realized a long time ago is that networking activities can be a little bit, they're not fun oftentimes. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to be maybe calling past customers, you might be doing some cold calling, you're dropping by and having uncomfortable situations. And so we had to make a way for it to be fun. And our way of doing that was to generate a visual representation of what networking looked like. And we call it the referral tree. I've seen it around after we kind of did it. I've seen the term around other places, but what it means to us is that we generate a visual representation. We get big sticky notes on the wall and we start putting the contacts on there. And the idea is who can build the biggest tree, you know, is the most successful. And so every time you get a connection, we're trying to build connections off the connections to build branches. Mm-hmm. And that activity, that combined with the activity tracker of like you have to hit so many points per week, as well as a visual representation, allows you to get really involved in the process. I think it's emotional. It's fun to build the branches. And for Dave, he gets wins every day just by creating relationships. And that's what we wanted to do. So I think there's something to that. There is for sure.
I love that tree thing. In fact, before I move on, the first time I thought it was an accident, but now I know it was on purpose. It's actually pronounced process. Not process. No, I'm just fucking with you. You Canadians.
That's my Canadian upbringing. Normally people can't tell my accent, but I just gave myself away. Thanks,
you
Tom.
Did, man. You did.
I appreciate that.
So I had this idea years ago that how cool would it be? And you're doing it. You're just doing the analog version of creating. Could you imagine if you could have like a big screen that had, you know, you've seen those images of like a water drop and a water drop and they're connected by a thread and it just goes out. Like those water drops to me are the customers.
Yep.
Like I think back to when I started my painting business, my very first customer is that first drop. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? And I'm sure you're seeing it because you're tracking it. But like if you go all the way back to the very beginning of your company, how important those relations are that connect, because this guy knew this guy and this guy knew 80 other people and this happened over here and none of it would have happened without this first one over here, you know? So I just close my eyes and I picture what that's got to look like in the average business. If you could actually do that for any contractor, because it's, which I love your emphasis in your company and this conversation around the relationships, the past clients, the referrals, you know, so for your brother, it's seeing that every day motivates him to add to it. Is that really all it comes down to? What you focus on improves, right?
So. Exactly. And you get to see where your opportunities exist. And so a lot of times I think in a CRM or something, the reason we've gone analog is because it's so tactile to write the name in and see. And when you do that, you understand where you haven't watered the tree recently. You understand where the opportunities exist. And when you're having a cold streak and you're thinking, how do I get out of this thing? It's like in your face as to what you haven't done recently. And that is motivating and also gives you direction.
All right. So if you're looking at the tree and you realize there's a branch you haven't watered in a while, what happens? How are you guys watering the thing?
I mean, there's so many great ways to water trees. No. Most of the time it's some type of interaction, phone call, it's a text, it's a, you know, some way of checking in. And it's not a sales call.
Right.
It's just a, you know, checking with your buddy you haven't seen for a while.
Yeah.
And that's a different approach. Like, you know, I haven't seen a good friend in six weeks. I want to call him and see how he's doing. Mm-hmm. Hey, what are you up to? How's things going? And I think it's that mindset that changes it versus, hey, I need work today. What do you got? And those aren't really relationships. Those are transactions.
Fighters, become a profit-making machine and get your keister to Mile High Profit Summit 2024 in Denver, Colorado. Listen, this is the last Mile High. This is the last one. We've had a great run and this is it. So if you've been meaning to get to Mile High, this is the one you're going to want to be at. And listen, you're going to want to get the VIP ticket. So here's the deal. In addition to the 2 days of the main event at Mile High Profit Summit, with amazing speakers and sessions to help you grow your business, you get a VIP workshop day, all right, with 6 workshops to choose from, everything from building a great team to implementing systems in the business, rethinking how you're doing your marketing, all right, what do you do if you want to sell your business, the basics of Shin Fu, all right, leadership strategies for rapid profit growth,
All these things are coming your way as a VIP ticket holder. So hit the damn link and get your butt to Mile High 2024. I'm out.
Yeah, it's funny. Before I had a name for these, and I took the name from one of my coaches. We call them UITs, unexpected intentional touches.
Yeah.
And way before I had a name for it, I remember I was driving through this neighborhood one day. This had to be 2006 and six or seven. And I looked down and I'm like, oh, Stacy lives down there. And we did that deck of hers. And it was a total pain in the ass. Like, we were like the third painting company to come in and do the deck because it kept peeling, right? Charged a fortune to strip this thing down and redo it. And I just happened to pick the phone up, went to her voicemail. I'm like, hey, Stacy, it's Tom. We did your deck 6-8 months ago. I was just driving through and I looked down and saw your house. And I was curious, how's the deck looking?
Mm-hmm.
That was it, right?
Right.
She had never called me back. 2 months later, because this was like August, September, beginning of November, she called me back. I answered the phone. I'm like, Stacy, what's going on? She's like, I'm so sorry. You're going to hate me. I'm like, what? She goes, thank you so much for the message a couple months ago. I keep meaning to call you. And now I'm afraid I'm too late. I said, well, what's the problem? And she goes, I got people coming for Thanksgiving and I need the whole house done inside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it was like, wallpaper coming. That was like $30,000 project the week before Thanksgiving that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's when the light bulb really went off for me, was like, huh, you know, like mm-hmm. you put this input in and here's the output. Right. And
right.
So, and what it taught me is if you just do that as a contractor, like you guys are doing, you are differentiating yourself from every other guy out there because most contractors are just on to the next new lead. It's transactional. Not that they don't care about their customers, but they don't realize the power in staying in touch. So one of the things we coach our community on inside of our Battleground program is how to do these UITs properly. And I'll give you a crash course. If I paint your house or build your garage or whatever it is, a few months later, I'm going to go, John. And it's a personalized text. It's not a bulk thing. It's John.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, we did the deck last summer. How's it looking? It's truly just a conversation. What we found is if you do three of these a day times the number of working days in a year, it's around 800 that you do. We've been doing these for years and tracking them.
Hmm.
Annually, about 5% turn into a new project.
Yeah.
So you do 800, 5%, that's 40 new projects right there. I got a GC in Milwaukee. Just doing that sold over $1 million just from those, from his past customers.
Yeah.
You know, so I love your emphasis on this because it's low hanging fruit. You know, 100%. You already worked hard to get the lead the first time. What are you going to do with it now?
Yeah. And everyone says it, like your best customer is your past customer, mm-hmm. customer you already had, right? Like, and I think that what's interesting is reviewing the data, you see it so obviously, and then we don't implement. And we go back to shoveling money into the massive furnace of Google and being like, yeah. please give me a lead where seven other guys are going to be bidding on it. It's like, mm-hmm. or whatever system it is. And I think there's just, it's so good to have a reminder like that. Like the thing you do, Tom, with the Battleground Group, like that is gold, like pure gold. Because so many people think that marketing and sales revolves around paying for it. And it's just not the case.
We had a guy the other day, he posted in the group. He's like, all right, I've been blowing this off forever. I finally did what Tom's been saying to do. And he reached out, not just to a couple past customers, but he reached out to some dead leads from last summer. And he's just like, hey, did you ever do the project? He called him up. They answered. He's like, did you ever do that job? And most of the people are like, yeah, we already did it. But one of the calls that day, I think he made 10 or 12 calls one day. One was a dead lead. Who it reignited the thing. And the next day he closed a $50,000 project with him because he picked the damn phone up and called a dead lead.
Yeah.
Like this. And so this is why I get so fired up when you said like your brother's a hunter and generates his own leads. Generating your own leads isn't just cold people that don't know you. It's also the leads that are within your database that they already know who you are. They're warm.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep that relationship going. So what other data did you guys look at? And what else jumped out or might be helpful?
Yeah. So let's talk about win rate, right? Okay. So what do you think top performers win rate? I mean, you mentioned 40%. What do you think the best guys in the world are doing?
I'm going to say the best guys in the world have their shit together, work in their database. It's not all cold traffic. It's repeat. This, I'm going to go 75%.
75. A little aggressive. It's actually 50.
All right.
But I'd love to say it's 75. I would love to say if you use Paint Scout, you're going to get a 75% win rate. Man, that would bring me so much joy.
Well, we could say
it's
that.
About
we could just say it.
We could say it.
Yeah.
Actually, the number this last year was 45%, which is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But no, it's just over 50.
Okay.
And I think when you dig into that data, there's a reason it's not 75. And that's because these guys aren't the cheapest. They don't want to be the cheapest. And right. So they're trying to get that balance, right? And I think I've heard the 50% talked about before, mm-hmm. Like 50% win rate. That's a good one. And I think when we interviewed these top performers, it just became clear that, you know, if it's too high, their price is just too low.
Right.
And they're always adjusting for that. They don't want everybody. And they want to get those jobs that are high value, good fit. And, you know, they're tailoring that to their experience.
Yep.
And so I don't know. Any thoughts there? 50% reasonable?
Well, I think, you know, my close rate with past customers was like 90.
Oh, yeah.
So
sure.
that's where I was coming with the 75 when you're pooling all the different sources together. I just figured that the top guys would be hitting their database harder. That's why I came up with that number out of the air.
But absolutely.
Yeah, the 50 makes sense because it's also timing. You know, people mm-hmm. are ready when they're ready, not when you're ready. You got the pricing factor and all those different things. But like, dude, I maybe sold 10% of Google leads. Like I got ass kicked with Google leads.
They're hard.
Back in the day. Because like you said, there's six other guys that they're calling and it's like, my God.
Clamoring and you're down to price a lot.
But I think it's also, if you answer your phone, you're going to get the job too. Like a lot of painters and contractors are competing with more people than they need to because they don't answer their phone.
Absolutely.
Because when I call a company, if you answer your phone, I called you because you probably had a lot of good reviews. Mm-hmm. So that was enough social proof for me. And I'm a high D on the disc. So I'm like, let's get this shit done. I'm not going to talk to 18 contractors. You know, I do a little bit of research online and I'm like, all right, this guy's squared away. I call you, answer the phone, you're getting the job.
Right.
I mean, I've already made my mind up. So,
and then they don't answer the phone. What do you do then?
I go to the next one until somebody answers the phone.
Exactly.
I don't leave a voicemail either. I read a stat a couple of years ago that like 85% of people don't leave a voicemail for a contractor when they call. If they don't answer
the phone. Yeah, I don't. So. I would say that's probably accurate. Yeah. Because you want that done now, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, this is where I think people get it wrong. It's like, they didn't, in the world that we currently live, like, I don't send a message to Amazon and they get back to me in 3 days being like, what would you like? It's like, I buy it now.
I order a thing on Amazon at 7 a.m. It shows up at 6 p.m. It's like crazy.
This may be work like in the past, but this doesn't not what people want anymore. So,
dude, it's like a Sunday night and like the Amazon guy's throwing something on our porch at 9 p.m. Right. I mean, it's crazy. And so, but that again, that's what your customers are used to in other industries and other things. So the least you could do is answer the phone.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think when you answer your phone, or if you have a feature on your website, when somebody's on your website late at night and they can book a time for you to call them or come out, whatever your process is, what happens is you've taken them off the market mm-hmm. because they've checked the box. Yep. I contacted the painter.
Yeah.
I got
absolutely. Yeah. It's a great way of framing
whatever.
It. Great way of framing it.
When you answer the phone or you have some technology to help them with that. All right. So you talked win rate. You talked average job size. We talked past customers, relationships, networking.
Yeah. We're covering the gamut here. So here's another interesting one. So there's kind of two terms we use, I think, in contracting for getting a job. Some people call it closed. What's your close rate? Some people say, what's your win rate?
Yeah.
And I think we got to clarify that conversation a little bit. Because win rate, and we see this through the data, win rate's the jobs you get. That's the win, lose. The top performers, one thing that separates them is they close out almost every job they get an estimate on. And what that means is they're getting a yes or a no.
Yep.
And when we look at some of the lower performers, they have so many open bids and there's so much opportunity in that open bid. And so that's really fascinating.
Yeah, I was taught years ago that a yes is good, a no is good, open bid is a problem. Like, huge that's problem. Just, you can handle yes or no, not knowing that's the issue. So
exactly.
What be about, did you, that. Yeah. Did you have any data on follow-ups?
Like how many follow-ups it took?
Yeah. Like, I'm that just curious, like how many of the top 36, are they relentless at that? Are they closing? Are they doing a lot of upfront work to build value to just sell the job now? Or what's that look like? What'd you find there?
So they do two things like pretty consistently. They're lead vetting like crazy. Mm-hmm. So is this person going to be good value for our business? And that doesn't mean that the job is huge. It just means whether they're the right customer.
Yeah.
And so that definitely helps. But a lot of them talk about follow-up as like, again, that idea of close. I need a yes or a no. Yeah. And I think they're bringing this up front. The best way I've heard it phrased by a bunch of them is they just don't care professionally.
Right.
They don't care. Right. Like, let's just be honest here. Let's be people, human beings. Mm-hmm. I'm either being a good fit or I'm not. And just be upfront. Like, yes. I don't care. I just need the yes or no. That's what's important. Mm-hmm. They're going to fight for the yeses. Of course they want that, but it's not the driver. Like, they want to work with customers that are good, not everybody. So follow-up, you know, they talk a bit about it. There's no silver, I hate to say, I mean, there's probably not a silver bullet there either. Mm-hmm. It's really just getting an understanding of what the customer wants and meeting them where they're at, getting the, you know, next step, follow-up agreements, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
And they talk a lot about that.
I have a absolute disgust for making follow-up calls. So, and that's why in our sales system that we teach you how to have the right conversation up front and the pre-qualification mm-hmm. that will actually prevent you from even doing a bid if you're not on the same page. And
absolutely.
And so it eliminates most of your follow-up. Now, obviously there's some bigger projects and stuff that are going to require multiple visits and some things like that. Right. But like, if you're, there's no reason if I'm calling a painter and I want to have my 1,000-square-foot basement painted, mm-hmm. there's no reason we can't figure that out on a 15-minute phone call, shooting a picture, doing a FaceTime walkthrough. And you're telling me, Tom, you know, we're looking at, you know, between 28 and I don't know, $3,200, you know, give or take, depending on a couple of things when I come out there, if that makes sense, what would you like to do next? Right.
Sure. Yeah.
And so yeah. I think, yeah, because for me with the, it's funny, the follow-up call makes me feel like I'm the little peasant boy going, oh, mister, may I have a piece of bread, please? You know, like that's what I picture follow-ups like, because you're calling going, hey, John, it's Tom. And I was just seeing if you're going to pick me because I'm a loser. And, you know, that's just I hate follow-up calls. Now, I'm okay setting a next step and all those other things. It's totally cool. But yeah. most contractors, most salespeople do a shitty job at that. And yeah. it ends up being this list of 30 people you got to call back on a Friday because it's follow-up Friday, you exactly. know? And all right, you can tell I have issues with this whole follow-up thing, but that's all right.
But like what you're talking about though, like it's not, like the data supports this, right? Like mm-hmm. that's where these people, like we wanted to interview them to see why, like why do you get better results? And they get better results for lead vetting, for getting relationships sorted out early. Talking about price early on in the process, right? Like, mm-hmm. why are we hiding this? And actually, interestingly enough, these people are always talking about price up front and at the bid. And, you know, one of the powers of what we've tried to do at Paint Scout is create that process of creating the estimate to be really quick, like yeah. you mentioned, so you can get to price fast. So you can try to close on the spot so we don't waste time. And yeah. you've already had that conversation up front, like you talked about, Tom, like, let's see if we're dance partners here. Mm-hmm. If we're not, we shouldn't even try to dance. Like, yeah. let's just call it what it is. And like, after you get to the point of the estimate, if you can bring a price to them, just like that Amazon example, they can buy, right? Like, and too often mm-hmm. I think I see it. I can't imagine. you probably have PTSD from this just with all the work you do, but people go away and don't tell the customer the price, you know? And so the follow-up is like, hey, I sent you a bid. We've never talked about price. The person's shell-shocked. It's like, mm-hmm. good luck. So anyways, that's one thing we see too.
There's a ton of things you can do to use a war term, to soften the beaches when it comes to price.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you can send the bombers in there and soften things up a bit through content and social media and talking about, you know, like, hey, this front entry that we refinished was only $1,600 and it would have been $3,000 for a new door, you know, and, you know, you're talking about money, you're answering those common questions. And I got to the point in our company, dude, where the first time that this happened, the way I'm sharing, blew my mind. I was writing, this is back when like blog posts were really sexy back in the early 2000s and stuff. And I wrote all these blogs on articles on interior painting prices. And so my keyword phrase was interior painting prices, colon, how much does it cost to paint a kitchen? Interior painting prices, colon, how much does it cost to paint a bathroom? Like every room in the house, within a couple months or so, I owned like 8 out of 10 of the organic Google spots for interior painting prices in our area. And so, and then we had pricing pages, and I taught people in these articles how we priced a paint job. And I would knock on a door. And the first time this happened, I go in, I had my tablet, had our little system on it because Paint Scout didn't exist then, or I would have had it.
Exactly.
And I hit the button and I hold up the tablet, and it's this husband and wife. They're on the other side of this kitchen island. And she looks at the price and she goes, yeah. And she looks at her husband and she flips him the bird and goes, suck it. I win. And I start laughing. I'm like, what's going on? She's like, we had a bet on who would be closest on the price. And she was within like $100 of my number.
Wow.
And I said, well, how did you come up with that number? She goes, it's all on your website. She did her own takeoff before we came out. So it was my job to lose. So my point here is like, use your content in the sales process, but also if you don't have that going right now, what you're saying, John, is don't be such a wuss. Talk about money now.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like, hey, we want our house painted, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think there's a lot of things I don't want to get into right now for sake of time, but like, I think where a lot of painters screw themselves is if somebody says, I want my house painted. Okay. We as a painter, as a craftsman, automatically think ceiling, closets, walls, base, doors, windows, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And there's a technique that we teach called bracketing in the sales process, where if I'm in your house, John, or you call me up and you go, say you just want the foyer painted, right? And I know it's like, I'm going to go, okay, well, you know, we're going to go through our process. And when we get to the money part, I'm going to be like, well, John, listen, I got one of two ways that we can approach this. Right. And now I'm going to scope the shit out of my high anchor here. I'm going to be like, we can come in here and skim coat the walls, make them baby butt smooth, put a couple coats of high grade primer and sand them again, and then grab some Benjamin Moore Aura or some Duration or whatever the hot paint of the year is right now on the high end stuff. And then we can sand down the, I'm going to make it sound like it's the Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm going to go, and for the foyer, for the ceiling and the trim and blah, 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 you're looking at, you know, $7,500 to $8,000 to do that. Right. And they're like, what the hell? And then you go, or we can just come in and put two coats on the walls for, you know, $2,850.
Yeah.
Which of those conversations you want to have, right? Where most painters go wrong is they hear, I want to paint the foyer or the house, and they don't give themselves bracketing room.
Right.
Right. Right. And I think I learned long ago, I want to de-scope the job and get a yes and a signed proposal. So if somebody says, well, I want everything done in the house, I would be like, you know, ceiling and walls or something as an example. Sometimes I'd be like, you know, John, last thing I want to do is spend money you don't need to spend. What if we just get the agreement going for the walls? And then when my crew leader's in there, you know, and everything's tarped out in each of the rooms and this and that, you guys could look at the ceilings. And if you got the one back bedroom that nobody ever has gone into for the last 7 years, probably doesn't make sense to paint the ceiling in there, you know, and that we would still hit our profit margins and higher, de-scope the job, take them off the street. And like, it was, and I, here's where I learned this. I know I'm like all over because all these memories are coming back.
Love it.
I screwed myself. There's an old saying in sales, don't sell past yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I sold this house. It was just the walls. I sold the walls and ceiling and just call it $30,000, whatever it was. And they're like, yeah, that sounds good. When can you do it? Okay. That should have been my cue to shut the hell up and just go sign here and we'll get you on the schedule. Me being, you know, craftsman, Mr. Know-it-all, you know, I got to be the smart guy. I go, you know, a lot of people, when they paint the walls and stuff, they realize their trim looks dingy, you know, and it doesn't look as clean and stuff. And so did you guys want to do the trim? And they're like, oh, that's a great idea. So I went through, added everything into my tablet, came back, was like, went from 30 to like 48 grand. Okay. Or whatever the number was. It was a huge jump.
Yeah.
Now they had to get other bids.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I basically I scoped myself out of a sale where I guarantee if I would have just sold the job, got the signature, got the deposit, got it on the schedule, and then told my crew leaders, hey, there's probably some upsell opportunities for the trim and doors and stuff. You do your thing, you know, we would have walked out of there with 45, 50 grand. So that's where I learned that lesson.
Everything about that is phenomenal, Tom, except it's foyer, not foyer. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Is that a Canadian thing again?
Yeah. just wanted to be clear.
Did you guys invent mayonnaise? Is that from Canada?
I don't know.
All right. I don't know.
I know that
I'm not sure where that came from. No. What's that?
I have an acquaintance who invented Dijonnaise.
Mustard mayonnaise or something? It's like a mix?
Yeah. And then he sold it back to whatever, it's Heinz, and made a fortune. Think about that for a second.
Dijonnaise,
yeah. Dijon and mayonnaise combined, and he managed to sell that.
I've never heard of that. Wow. Are you a regular mayonnaise guy or a Miracle Whip tangy guy? What are you?
Oh, full-on regular. Give me all the fat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember that 140 pound soaking wet thing? That hasn't really changed much. So I'm down.
I love it. So we've been talking sales. You got a virtual event coming up, I heard, that's sales focused.
That's right.
What do you got going on, and where can people connect with you?
We're bringing some real heavy hitters together for the painting. We call it Paint Scout X. It's a chance for us to talk sales in the painting industry. And we've got 12 speakers lined up, and they're excited to share their knowledge. These are people that some of them have done some really amazing things in their career.
Yep.
And you know, it's not every day you get to hear from these people. So yeah, Paint Scout X, it is April 10th and 11th, I believe. My team is probably going to kill me because I don't remember the exact dates, but check it out at our website, paintscout.com. And come join us, Paint Scout X. It's going to be a fun time, and I'm sure you'll take away some nuggets to increase your sales game. So,
yeah. I'm pulling it up here. My assistant sent me something on your event.
Yes.
2 days, Wednesday, April 10th, and Thursday, April 11th. How's that?
I nailed it.
Does that sound right?
That sounds right to me.
All right.
Yes. So digital, all virtual, so you can sign up and come listen to some talking heads.
And it's at paintscout.com. They can find it.
Paintscout.com. Yeah. They'll be up something up there soon. I imagine by the time it's posted, it'll be up already. But yeah, check it out, paintscout.com.
Cool. We'll get the link in there and stuff. So for somebody who wants to learn more about Paint Scout, I know we didn't talk a whole lot about it, but give us the flyby on the software.
What is this?
You know, fill us in a little, man.
Yeah, this is my weakest part of my podcasting skills is pushing our product. But it is, Paint Scout is kind of this platform that's going to revolutionize the sales in your painting business. And it's based, it can tackle a bunch of estimating systems, but for those that use production rates, time-based rates, there's just nothing like it out there, I believe, for your user experience. There's nothing that facilitates bringing on a sales rep better. And honestly, I think it gives you the best chance of winning every job. And that's really what we're at after. My dad used to tell me, it's easier to do the work than get the work. And I truly believe that. That drives everything that we do here. And everything starts with the sale. So give yourself the best chance. And that's what drives us. So that's Paint Scout. Check it out.
Paint the thing if you don't sell the thing.
100%.
So you brought something up with these sales reps earlier, the 36. I forgot to ask you. Was there any commonalities or data around the experience of these salespeople? Like, did they come from the field as painters? Were they non-painters? Mm-hmm. I'm just curious if anything there jumped out to you.
So yes, we actually asked them all. We surveyed them. And the one thing to keep in mind is 10 of the people, 10 of the 36 were business owners. Okay. So they're probably coming from some paint background.
Right.
But the other 26 is what we surveyed. And if it was 50-50.
So 50 had experience with the brush and 50% didn't. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So there's really the thing that came out is that these people are, they're sales professionals. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's something to take away for the industry is that it can be professional. We will be professional. And those that are professional succeed. And there's always a chance to increase your professionalism. Bringing on a sales rep, fantastic decision. And those people just need to sell. So,
yeah, they, and you brought up the term production rates a second ago. A lot of contractors aren't familiar with that, but it's, you know, everything you do, it should be assigned a time. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, when you start, you're not going to know what your times are, right? But you're gonna lick your finger and guess it's gonna take 4 hours to do this thing, and then the other end of the job, you job cost it, and you compare, and then you adjust your production rates. Mm-hmm. And the more that you can get that dialed in and have dialogue with your crews, and you know, the more money you're gonna make. Because where I learned this lesson in the painting industry, man, was we had a builder that I did a ton of work for, and they were like semi custom homes and. Probably the average job was 35, 40 grand. We'd be in and out, right? And when I started with them, I was not bidding with production rates. I was doing the stupid square footage method that, you know, another painter taught me to do, right? And whatever, based on his numbers, not on mine. What I realized is, and I'll just use 100 man hours as an example. I was like bidding it to the equivalent of like 100 man hours, but in reality, it was taking us 80, mm-hmm. which is a good thing rather than taking us 120, right? That's better. The problem was if you're not accurate on your times, how many projects are you losing because you're overbidding what it really needs to be? That's where something like Paint Scout comes in, where you can enter in those production rates. This is, you know, how long it takes to paint base or caulk this or whatever. And you dial that in over time, it's like the two wings of an airplane. You got the art of estimating and you got the science of estimating, you know? And the science is 100 square feet an hour for two coats was ours for walls.
That's pretty standard.
Yeah. And then the art part of it, that was the science. The art would be, I don't know, that seems probably going to take an hour and a half to patch and prime. Let's give it a go, you know, and then you figure it out as you go. So,
yeah. Tom, I'm going to jump in because what you just said, that principle, when I learned it, changed my life. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit hard because it's kind of like the red pill, blue pill in the Matrix. You got to trust it a little bit.
Yeah.
You got to jump in full on. Like there's no going back. But when you do, your business and your life change. And I felt that like emotionally. My relationships got better once I understood how to price and make money. And so hearing it even again, just like brings me tingles because I'm like, yes, 100% yes. Everything you talked about, that's the way this should be. But you mentioned, you know, as a community, as an industry, painting, everyone thinks they have a special way of doing it. Right. But it needs to be a special way. And I'm going to tell you right now, every single one of these top companies does it the way you talked about it. And it's like, let's just move on. Like that is the way. Square footage, why? Like I'm sure you heard it, some guy at the paint store who, you know, he didn't know, he just heard. And people get, I get so worked up because I believe so strongly in this. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. And so like the square footage thing is fine if you're doing the same thing over and over, like the same house. The same model of a house. And eventually we broke it into square footage and just gave it to the builder and said, this is the number. And then this is what, you know, built-ins cost. And this is what a custom bar that's stained cost or whatever. But like you can get it to the square footage, but it all starts with the man hours. You got to get it to the man hours and then you can convert it if it's the same cookie cutter type home, mm-hmm. you know, across the board.
Because just to follow up on that, when you do square footage, so you're kind of square footage in that particular case works because you're giving it to somebody who understands that and can price.
Yeah.
But what it doesn't do is give your crew a plan for success, mm-hmm. right? Like now you're going back and having to divide by an hourly rate. That gets complicated. And so people want to know what the destination is.
Right.
And if you don't, then now you're at 150 on that 100 hour job. And you're saying, well, why did you guys work so slow? Well, maybe you were wrong. like so without that way to back check it and actually understand it, there's no way to get to square footage. Or else you're just wild ass guessing. You know?
Right. Right. So it sounds like, not making an assumption, that Paint Scout probably has a work order that has the man hours on it per area.
Wow. I think we're going to hire you, Tom. That's an amazing idea. That is the crux of this thing. It builds the estimate wheel, builds a work order, and builds a beautiful proposal for your customer. Those three things together run the sales for your painting company, in my opinion.
All right. As we wrap up here, what's one of your absolute favorite features of Paint Scout? Like, you're like, all right, when we added this one, we could pat ourselves on the back now.
Yeah. So I can tell you what the feature that I find myself unconsciously going to, like, you know, when you find yourself and you're like on Facebook, you don't know how you got there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the equivalent for me.
Okay.
It's that we get to see insights into the customer spirit, like their interaction with your estimate. So when they view it, how long they view it, how many times they view it, all those types of things. When they sign, when they close, when they pay the deposit, all that stuff. For me, I am unconsciously looking to see, hey, did you know that customer get the proposal? Oh, they looked at it for 20 minutes. Well, the likelihood of them wanting to work with us after looking at it for 20 minutes is pretty high.
Yeah.
They looked at it for 10 seconds. Hey, I might want to do a quick follow-up to make sure they got that. I know follow-up, that's an F word. We shouldn't use that. But it's like, let me get the data. Like, this is not no longer a free, like, I'm not just giving you data anymore. I am receiving data. And that's going to facilitate a better customer experience and allow me to win more and more often. So that, to me, that's where I find myself. There's so many great, fun features, but I like to see real time. You know, I want that real feedback. So
good stuff, man. Good stuff. Well, dude, I enjoyed chatting with you about sales and some of this data.
Good.
And we'll get the links to whatever you got going on in April there, the 10th and 11th, I think you said it was, right?
That's right. Yeah. 11th?
Yeah.
Yep. 10th and 11th.
And we'll get it out and share it as well. And y'all get on that thing, learn something, implement it in your business. If you're a painting contractor and you're not yet using Paint Scout, give it a shot. Go to paintscout.com, do a demo. You know, it's kind of like crack samples, right? You know, drug dealer gives you crack, you get a little sample, you know, boom, done. That's what a demo is, man.
First month's free, man.
First month's free. Is that what you got going on?
Let's do that. Yeah.
All right, reach out
to us. First month's free. We'd love to show you. If you don't like it, hey, nothing risk, nothing gained, right? So you can check it out for yourself and let us know you came from the Contractor Fight and we'll hook you up.
And I want to, that's awesome, man. I appreciate that. I also want to say that, guys, having a tool like this is key for those of you that want to build and grow your business. Like John, you mentioned, you know, it's great to onboard new salespeople and stuff because you're giving them a way to price shit right out of the box, right? Like right out of the gate. And it makes training them so much easier, especially if they don't have industry experience. It gives them a starting point, gives them all the tools, sales tracking, and you know the different templates that you have in there, and just makes it easier because you have to, you want to grow and scale your painting business, you have to get out of the way of doing everything, right? You got to be able to hand. And I believe sales is the hardest thing to hire in a business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just my own personal experience. So you hire somebody with kick-ass character and you give them a tool like this, they're probably going to come out of the gate pretty hard, swinging and winning. So
absolutely. Yeah. And that's your next best way of adding $1 million to $1.5 million right there, especially in the painting industry.
Yep.
That's, you know, that's what you need to get to the next level and get your time back. So I agree 100%.
Love it.
Yeah, man.
John, I appreciate you being here.
And, thanks, Tom.
We will get all the links that are applicable in the notes. And with that, you guys, check out Paint Scout. Share this episode with a painter that you know. Give us a rating, review, blah, 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 blah. You guys rock. We got to roll. We are out.